Welcome to another journey, UFOs, aliens, history, and the mystery of the human being. Isn't everybody a mystery? Every human being is a mystery. They are. Everybody's got their own story, and most, if not all, are really, really good stories, whether regardless of who you are or what status you hold in life, your story is interesting. I hear people tell me about what they do, you know, or what they've done, and everybody always has something interesting that they've done in their lives, which is pretty cool. I dig it. I like hearing people's stories. I am sort of a a biography nut, I guess you can say. Not nut, but boy, do I like listening or watching biographies of people, or reading them, reading biographical or autobiographical stories about people. Like, I just finished the Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. Wow. That dude was intense. He was an intense man, Steve Jobs. He, when he was young, he went to India and learned how the Buddhists and how they meditate and all that, and then came back to the United States and knew exactly how his life was going to go, including knowing he was going to die young. And he died relatively young, especially for being a billionaire. It's a shock when any billionaire dies. You think, oh, they have all the medical and everything solved, but they don't. Don't let the money fool you. Don't let people fool you. I mean, there are, yes, people with money will live longer, but they won't forever. Nobody will. And that's just the simple fact of the matter, at least in these bodies of ours, physical bodies. As far as the spirit goes, however, we're gonna probably live forever, our spirits. And I'll get into that one of these days, as far as my beliefs and my spirituality and all that, and how I feel, and what I've learned too through the years. I'll just give you a brief history on myself. I went to Catholic school when I was a kid. Even though we didn't have the money, we were very poor. My mom had five children, my mom and dad. My father passed away when I was young, and so did my brother. So there was my three older sisters and me after my father passed away, and my mom. And, when my dad passed away, we were poor. That's all there is to it. But my mom wanted me in a better school to give me a better education and a better life. And, and just give me a better chance of being successful. And, I went to Catholic. So, getting back to it, I was raised a Catholic. When I, eighth grade, I went into public school and never went back to, Catholic or private school. I stopped going to church, but I kept my beliefs for a long time, until I was an adult, and then I sort of lost faith in everything. I didn't, you know, I kind of was a lost soul, and it took many years, but then I realized and found and learned and educated myself and realized, at least I believe, there is an afterlife waiting for everybody. Every one of God's creations has a place. And I'll get more into that later, but it's not like a Christian or Catholic or anything like that. I'm not like that religiously. I just know that there is one, whatever that one is, creator. It just doesn't make any sense that there's not a creator, right? And, like these religions, I do believe there is a place for them. And I do believe that there is, there is a lot of truth to the religions. It's just history's been rewritten over the ages and time and lost as well. And so what was once known has now changed. And so anyway, I do believe in an afterlife. If you just bottom line that. So tonight, in just a minute, I'm going to read chapter 3. And I'll read chapter 3 of the Adam and Eve story. The title of it is, let me pull it, I have it right here. Let's see, the title is called The Story, Enigma, Pursuit, Unraveling. So yeah, so that's the title of the chapter. And I'm going to plan on reading that here in just a minute when I'm done doing my intro. Today's date is March 31st, 2022, Thursday, March 31st, 2022. So yeah, so that's the only thing I'm going to do tonight besides talk here in the beginning is read the chapter. So that's it. But then tomorrow or perhaps Saturday, I will do a UFO report. And may talk a little bit on Megalith. We'll see. I've been doing a lot of YouTubing. A lot of YouTubing lately, especially on Megalith. And not just Megalith, but travel ones too. Travel podcasts or travel YouTube channels. Just like here's the probably the best travel channel or travel vlog or vlog or whatever, travel video logs I've seen is this guy, this kid, Dakota of Earth. If you haven't heard of him, I highly recommend checking him out. He's everywhere on media, social media, his YouTube channel. If you're into traveling and you want to see different parts of the world, I highly recommend checking him out. He's very realistic. Very, like, it's not like that cookie cutter travel channel TV show where everything's all nice and neat and put in a box and tied with a bow. He goes to the streets. He goes and talks to the people. He checks everything out. He talks to people. He talks to his followers, or as he calls friends on his YouTube channel. He goes and checks out all the neatest things. He also is a into bettering himself spiritually, and which I think is really cool. The way he is, he's just so friendly, very very charismatic. People are just drawn to him naturally, and never really seen unfriendly in him. I've only seen friendly people, and they always approach him and say hi, and he explains to him what he's doing. He's welcome to anybody and everybody to come up to him and talk to him. He explores. One of my favorite ones, if you want to start, are his Egypt ones, but I think the best one I saw was his Petra ones, where he visited Petra and Jordan. Wow. He also visits Göbekli Tepe. He goes to India. He smoked weed at Bob Marley's house. I mean, there's so many of them, in Jamaica, you know, he goes all around the world, and he goes to Mexico, and in fact, he goes to this Mexican village where apparently aliens visit all the time, and somehow are connected with this little village in Mexico. And there's all kinds of them, but, and then he's got a podcast, and he's also got a bunch of other stuff. This is just free advertisement for him, because, you know, I'm just a fan, that's all. I'm just a fan. I'm not, this isn't an ad for him. I just want to make that clear, that I am just a fan of his, and it's really cool show, really cool channel. Me and my wife just totally dig it. She just, she says, you know, he's, and that, so do I, agree with her that he's just always friendly with everybody, no matter. And I know, you know, there might be another side to people that you don't see when they're not recording or whatever, but for him, I don't think so. I think what you see is what you get with him. And it's just really cool. So I recommend checking him out. And I guess the reason I brought him up is because of his visits to places like Göbekli Tepe and the pyramids of Egypt and even Pyramid of Mexico and South America. Or actually, I'm not sure if he went to pyramids in South America. I think so. Anyway, I'm going to be talking more on that kind of stuff, those kind of topics. I follow a lot of the alternative history or type people where, you know, they say how history is created for people's personal benefits. Like, history, like, for example, the Egyptians, they're proud of being Egyptian. And they want to claim that the Egyptians built the pyramids because they're the Egyptians, you know, and why wouldn't you? I mean, if I were them, I would be the same way. Like, no, there's no way. No, the Egyptians built the pyramids. That's it, you know, if I were Egyptian, of course. But there's also a belief that there's an ancient civilization prior to recorded history, written history, where there was a civilization with advanced technologies out there. And yeah, and I totally believe that. I totally get it. And it's true. There is a, I believe that there was a advanced, technologically advanced society, which matches or even exceeds our current modern era of technology. And it may have been different, you know, like we have computers and thinking machines, and the technology of the past was their architecture. And how they mastered nature is what I think. And you know, you see that in all these different things, like the pyramids and stone architecture and things like that. Where, how did they do it? They had to have had some advanced technology. And getting back to the Egyptians, that, you know, the civilization prior to them, who knows who they were? You know, there's not a lot of evidence of who the actual people were. And there's not any written, except for, you know, like some images or like on stonework, where there's pictures, like Göbekli Tepe, or, you know, where there's like the raised images on their stones, their architecture on their T's and their statues they had, and how there's, you know, there's, but other than that, there's no language that at least has been found yet, or that is known that has been. But anyway, I'll get into more of that in the future. But that's my plan. I was talking some of this stuff and talking it out and letting you, if you want to listen, you know, I appreciate it, but you know, you don't have to. I don't know why I always say that. I shouldn't. You have to listen. You must listen. Listen to me. No, but, and I, and also, not just ancient civilization, but how it's possible that there was help from, oh, the heavens or this, you know, aliens or some kind of outside, that there may have been some assistance. Or some assistance, maybe not per se helping them build or anything, but perhaps educating and rescuing. Like, let's say there was a major cataclysm, like a comet came and smacked the Earth, or for whatever reason, or, you know, like, I don't know, like Yellowstone erupts, or whatever the reason, the world's gonna end, and somehow people are left. And so an ark or a ship, or somehow, you know, people were saved and rescued, and then once the Earth settled down, were brought back to and allowed to rebuild. You know, that's a possibility. I mean, it's far-fetched, but it's a possibility. Who knows? Who really knows? All we can do is make educated guesses. That's all we can do. As far as past and history goes. As far as today, though, I mean, you just gotta look up. And just search UFO sightings on YouTube, and you are guaranteed sightings from anywhere, everywhere, from anyone, everyone. I mean, you find them everywhere. UFO Twitter is the great one, or just Twitter. Maybe not UFO Twitter, but just Twitter. UFO Twitter has kind of been changing the last month or so since Lou Elizondo went on the interview circuit. It seems to be all about him or all against him, you know, all for him or all against, but it's definitely polarizing. He's kind of like the Donald Trump of the UFO world, Lou Elizondo is. Yeah, he's just a polarizing guy. People either love him or they hate him. There's really no... everybody likes him or everybody doesn't like him. It's just one or the other, it seems. I guess that's it. Yeah, I guess that's it. So I'll be back with chapter 3 of the Adam and Eve story. Chapter 3 of the Adam and Eve story by Chan Thomas. I'll be reading that to you right this very moment. If I get any thing wrong, you can let me know if you want. Just hit me up either on Twitter or email or whatever. And I apologize if I get any words wrong or any grammar, pronunciations, anything like that. My apologies. I'll work on that for sure. And I've read the book once, so I kind of have an idea. But even so, I know I'm not going to get everything right, because the way he wrote it is very, you know, there's a lot of words in it. hard to pronounce. And then the copy I'm reading to is a little blurry in some certain pages. It's just kind of like a photocopy PDF version. Speaking of, there's a link to it on my... Ooh, sorry about that. just dropped my soundboard. But anyway, a link to the book on my Twitter feed or in the description of the show description. All right, well, here we go. Chapter 3, title, The Story. Enigma, Pursuit, Unraveling. Here we go. It's funny how some things can plague you from your childhood years through your adult years. Not big things necessarily, but little things which don't exactly persist, but annoyingly stick their heads through your life's door and say, boo, just to let you know they're still there. If I made a list of all these things in my life, it might take up a whole book. I'd like to talk about just one of these bugaboos. From the first time I heard the story of the creation and Adam and Eve, even as a child, it bothered me. To me, the answer wasn't simply one of two usual alternatives, either unquestioning faith in the story as it stands, or complete repudiation as utter nonsense. No, the answer seemed to lie elsewhere. If the story were taught as the truth so uniformly, in spite of its apparent divergence from scientific truths, then to me, the true course would seem to be a search for the foundation of the story, which would then lead to a true reading of it. The pursuit happened almost by accident. Years of data correlation in studying cataclysmology has shown the last cataclysm to have occurred about 7,000 years ago. That Noah, or Utnapishtim, or whatever his name was, did exist and survive that cataclysm. A friend of mine suggested that Genesis 1 is almost a perfect description of conditions on our planet right after a cataclysm, including about a week following. On reading it, I had to agree. Genesis 2 even mentions that a mist, proper translation, inundation, arose from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. Well now, this was worth thinking about. If it were so, then it would be the cataclysm preceding Noah's, another fascinating story, about 11,500 years ago. This, then, could be approximately the time of the Adam and Eve story. The pursuit started. If the story did originate with that cataclysm, in what language was it first written? Certainly not Hebrew or Greek, for as we know, they didn't even exist at the time. Was it possible to delve into the vanished pages of prehistory and find both the language and the story as originally written? If we look to men such as Don Antonio Barres, Yoruquay, and James Churchward, we may have our answer. Certainly their knowledge of prehistoric languages could be a key, and later we'll discuss the role of Naga, an ancient Mayan, in the story of Adam and Eve. First, however, let's examine the history of Genesis 1, 2, and 3. There are many schools of thought on this subject. The predominant one is that Moses was the originator. This seems not obtuse, since Moses was reared in the Egyptian tradition, in a royal household. He probably had access to many religious writings and teachings, now lost with the passing of the archives in Egypt, in Alexandria, Heliopolis, and Sais. Certainly, the Ten Commandments were a condensation of the 42 questions of Osiris for entering heaven. If Moses did write part of the Old Testament, he then must have had Naga tablet writings or Egyptian interpretations of them handed down to the Egyptians for thousands of years through the royal households and the Egyptian priesthood. had knowledge of a cataclysm 11,500 years ago from our time. Priests of Egypt are supposed to have told Solon during his 10 years in Egypt about 600 BC that 9,000 years before that time there was a cataclysm which buried Atlantis beneath the ocean. Note that 9,000 plus 600 BC was 1950 AD equals 11,550 years ago. Side note, it is not 1950, it is now 2022, so we would have to add 72 years to that to get the proper number, which would be 11,622 years ago. Okay, I'm back. Or let me end side note. Moses' brother, Aaron, became the first chief priest of the Hebrews about 1300 BC. Somewhere between 15 and 18 generations later, the chief priesthood, having been handed down from father to son through the generations, Sarai, was the chief priest. See Ezra and 1 and 2 Esdras. Later, in 586 BC, in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Sariah was executed and his son Ezra made a captive in Persia. See 2 Kings. Jerusalem was sacked and all Hebrew laws and records of the Old Testament were burned with the temple at Jerusalem by Nebuzaradan, Nebuchadnezzar's captain of the guard. In 458 BC, the 7th year of Artaxerxes' reign in Persia, Ezra was commissioned to reestablish the Hebrew religion and law. According to 2 Esdras, Ezra rewrote the history of the Hebrews from the beginning and reestablished their laws. Now, from 586 to 458 BC is 128 years. The latest that Ezra could have been born after was after his father Sariah's execution, as well could be see Anon's story, Genesis 38:8 through 10. Therefore, the youngest he could have been in 458 BC was 127. He was working on a long memory. Let's examine this anomaly. As mentioned before, the lineage from Aaron to Ezra contains from 17 to 20 generations, including Aaron and Ezra. Assuming 1300 BC to be the start of Aaron's priesthood, 1290 BC is judged to be the time of the Exodus, 458 BC to be near the end of Ezra's priesthood. Then we find the average priesthood term per generation to be between 42.1 and 49.5 years. In view of this, can we believe that Ezra served his priesthood for approximately 130 years, which includes his entire lifespan? It would appear much more plausible to assume that it was Ezra's grandfather, Azariah, rather than his father, Sariah, who was the one taken and executed by Nebuchadnezzar's men in 586 BC. Then Sariah and Ezra would have served as chief priests from 586 to 458 BC for an average of 64 years apiece. It is even plausible that Ezra's great-grandfather, Hilkiah, could have been the victim in 586 BC, leaving Azariah, Sariah, and Ezra to serve the 128 years for an average of 42 years each, which is even closer to the overall average of 42.1 to 49.5 years from Aaron to Ezra, over a period of about 845 years. This means that the Adam and Eve story was the last seen in writing by Hilkiah or Azariah, therefore handed down verbally possibly by Azariah, and certainly by Sariah and Ezra, and finally dictated by Ezra to five scribes. It is the five scribes' writings that we have today as Ezra's work, and the English is not even a literal translation. For instance, quotation, without form and void, end quotation, more literally would read, quotation, raging inundations and horrendous winds, end quotation. Now, through Ezra's reconstruction of Genesis, we are told many things. 1. Because of the use of tree, fruit, serpent, cherubim, sword of fire, and other words of Moses, which were glyphs in the picture language of prehistory, it is evident that the creation and Adam and Eve stories were probably written in the glyphs of Naga, the predominant Eastern Hemisphere language of 11,500 years ago. This language is nearly identical to prehistoric Mayan and the progenitor of many languages, which include Oriental and Polynesian tongues, Egyptian, Greek, and Yakut. My own knowledge of prehistoric Naga and Mayan glyphs enables me to read many Indian blankets of the southwestern United States, which have woven into them colorful glyphs depicting a cataclysm. I wonder if the Indians are chuckling to themselves, knowing that the tourists think they are buying blankets of just pretty pictures. Yakut is an interesting language. It is almost pure spoken Naga. It is spoken by Alaskan Eskimos. The town of Yakut means the place where Yakut is spoken. It is also spoken by a native tribe in Turkey. Naga, in almost its purest prehistoric form, is spoken by a tribe in northern India. It is pure prehistoric Mayan. 2. Moses, certainly, and possibly Aaron, had access to the Royal Egyptian Glyph Stones Library. 3. Neither Moses nor Aaron knew how to read the ancient glyph languages of Naga or Mayan, therefore read the glyphs quite literally. And 4. Not being able to read the symbolism of the glyphs. In addition to reading them literally, Moses and Aaron, and possibly Ezra, read into the Adam and Eve story the social and religious attitudes of their day. In that time, woman was regarded as the root of all sin, a lowly creature, her birth recorded only as an exception, and basically being the cause of man's every downfall, a daily potential. This attitude persists even in worse forms in some religions, amazingly, in our time. Is it any wonder that Eve was shouldered with the responsibility for the downfall of all mankind as a result of interpretations read into the Naga by Moses and into Moses' reading by Ezra? Perhaps also it was read into the story by Egyptian priests long before Moses' time and passed on to him verbally as history. If his father were really the one taken and executed by the captain of the guard, Nebuzaradan, then it had to be his grandfather who passed the story to him verbally. The fusing of two stories, P and J versions, into one, to make the story of Genesis 1, 2, and 3 may confuse the man with Adam. It is possible that Adam, being only 9 generations ahead of Noah, with the time span of the Sudan Basin polar era covering about 4,500 to 5,000 years, was not the man referred to in the creation, but his name and experiences were merged with the man's story. Remember, however, we are informed that Ezra dictated the entire history to 5 scribes from memory, and this work contains Genesis as we know it today. For him to recall from the archives of his mind what he did as well as he did certainly bespeaks of inspiration of a high order, but it also appears evident that he had no knowledge of the fact that 4,500 years transpired between Genesis 1 and Noah's flood. It is clear from 2 Esdras 3:9 that Genesis 1 and Noah's flood were actually 2 inundations, however. For while speaking of the 2 occasions he says of Noah's flood, "And again in the process of time thou broughtest the flood upon those that dwelt in the world, and destroyedst them." Now we mentioned before that the lineage of the high priest from Aaron to Ezra differs in numbers of generations, 17 or 20, and names as presented in 1 and 2 Esdras. And both differ in names from the book of Ezra. We also find differences in the lineages from Noah to Jesus, approximately 51 generations, in the Bible. Is it any wonder, therefore, that some generations could not have or could have been omitted in the Adam to Noah line? Not to mention the Noah to Jesus line and the Aaron to Ezra line? And in light of the fact that, in addition to overwhelming evidence, there are countless legends in the Asia-Pacific areas handed down from the inundation of 11,500 years ago of a creation much like that of Genesis 1 and 2, is it not possible that the man of the Genesis story became confused with Adam throughout the thousands of years? And through a succeeding cataclysm in Noah's time 7,000 years ago? The miracle is that the whole story of creation and of Adam and Eve is as undistorted as it is. Being 11,500 years old, it has suffered through many debacles visited upon its guardians in the intervening years. Because of the lack of resolving information, the man and Adam are kept as one in this translation. Interpretation. 6. The significant Naga glyphs given to us by Ezra through Moses' direct reading are cherubim's rib, Adam sleep, man, woman, tree, fruit on the tree, serpent, and flaming sword. Our knowledge of Naga glyphs tells us that the tree of life symbolized a mother continent, a parent civilization lasting thousands of years longer than ours of today. An unadorned serpent represented water in its natural state, or the ocean. A serpent entwined around the tree signified that the mother continent was surrounded entirely by water. Genesis 3:15 actually describes Eve's heel on the serpent's head, depicting her victory over the oceans. Cherubims, which were not pretty, plump babies, as we always thought, but glyphs of hybrid man and beast. They were the glyphs for legs or foundations or underpinnings. Instead of being placed in the Garden of Eden, the foundation was taken away, and a Naga or Mayan reading of the Egyptian Book of the Dead shows that cherubims of the north, south, east, and west were taken away, meaning that all the foundations of the mother continent were removed and destroyed. Flaming sword was the symbol of fire and earthquake. The fire signified what all legends of these cataclysms call earth fire, which is the planet-wide molten layer of the earth Earth's 60-mile thick shell breaking through to the surface during a cataclysm, a literal hell. It is, as far as I have been able to determine, the origin of man's concept of hell. I remember watching John Kennedy's funeral on television, and most vividly, the incantation given by the Archbishop to keep John Kennedy from the doors of hell. His words went back to pre-Christian Rome, for in describing those gates of hell, he painted a picture of hell exactly like that of the molten sublayer breaking through the earth's shell. It had to be handed down through the thousands of years from one who had actually seen it. Chills ran up and down my spine as it stamped an indelible impression on my mind. Now to the tree. Fruit growing on that tree symbolized the mankind which settled the mother continent ages before Adam and Eve. Their eating the fruit tells us they were descended from this original mankind. Eve eating first signifies that she was the younger generation. Adam eating second signifies that he was her father, which made her his daughter. His daughter? Yes. It is the origin of one of the oldest Hebrew laws. In a catastrophe, if but a male and female survive, they must mate, regardless of their relationship. If you want to check on this, read the story of Lot and his two daughters. Daughters were simply obeying Hebrew law. He is stated to be too drunk to know what he was doing. If he were, he couldn't have performed. He must have been a good actor. The glyph of the creation is even more revealing. There are three figures represented on the stone. The top figure is the face of a sleeping or dead person. There were no separate symbols for death and sleep in Naga. Both were represented as the same. The middle figure is shown as a male, and the bottom figure a female, who is represented as the mother of all mankind. In addition, there are curved lines from the sleeping or dead person and the male middle figure to the bottom of the female figure. This glyph has been interpreted to mean that the middle figure, a male, was put to sleep, shown by the top figure, and a rib or ribs removed from him, the ribs being the curved lines, and fashioned into the bottom figure, the female mother of all mankind. This fits beautifully with the story of Eve's creation. Adam, therefore, being both the male middle figure and the top figure, a sleeping or dead person. There is a hitch to this story, however. The top figure, either sleeping or dead, is depicted as a female. How could it be Adam, asleep, awake, dead or alive? Moreover, the Naga, the curved line. Moreover, in Naga, the curved lines denote parentage rather than ribs. So, more reasonably, it appears that the top figure is a dead female, whose offspring by the male middle figure, Adam, was the top bottom female figure, Eve, the mother of all mankind. I have been asked countless times how one can tell the top figure to be a dead female, to the extent that I guess I owe an answer here. In Naga and prehistoric Mayan, they show that they worshipped but one deity, and represented that deity by a glyph of a circle representing the sun. Anytime a circle was shown on a tablet, it could only represent their deity. This tablet has two circles on it. Purists have stated that the writers of this tablet meant to show double intensity of the deity. Strange, I have never seen anywhere a double intensity of two circles in either Naga or prehistoric Mayan. The curious thing about these two circles is that they are located precisely where a female's breasts should be on the top figure. Maybe that's what double intensity is all about. The most curious thing about this stone is that it fits the legend of Adam being a widower and the name of his deceased wife being Lilith. If true, it would also reveal Lilith to be Eve's mother. So, in essence, the story as read from the glyphs would be that Adam and Eve, who lived in the Garden of Eden on the Mother Continent tree, were descended from the original mankind fruit of that land, which incidentally was surrounded entirely by water, serpent entwined around the tree. Eve was Adam's daughter, and he was a widower. They realized that in order to survive, they had to leave and never try to return. For the motherland was destined to be destroyed by cataclysmic inundation. Eve had perceived this coming event, and Adam asked her how she had discovered it. She answered that she had inherited the intelligence to do so from her ancestors. As a result, she had gained victory over the inundation. Eve's heel on the serpent's head. They left the motherland, and afterward the continent tree was subjected to a fiery earthquake, flaming sword, during which it lost its foundations, cherubims, and sank beneath the ocean, serpent, which remained forever afterward burying the continent, forever afterward crawling on its belly. So let's review the event two cataclysms ago, and then apply our knowledge toward a representative translation interpretation of Genesis 1, 2, and 3. It may be the most accurate reading of a story written 11,500 years ago. End of chapter 3. So there we go. That last page sort of sums it all up, and then he's gonna, go into more in the next chapter 4, which is titled The Event. We're about a third of the way through this book now, so that will conclude tonight. I'll let you, sit on that, and I'll, in a day or two, I'll do chapter 4. Which is once again titled The Event 11,500 Years Ago. Alright, well, thank you for listening. I truly appreciate it, as always. And I'll be back soon. Have a great night. With love.